14. But it hath not yet attained tomorrow, and hath lost yesterday, and you live no more in this day's life than in that movable and transitory moment. Boethius. The TV news announcer said, "On the local scene, it seemed as if all Los Angeles turned out tonight to stare at or cheer for the head of the faith of Udai, His Mightiness Ray Roberts, who touched down at the Los Angeles airport shortly before 7 o'clock this evening. On hand to meet him was Mayor Sam Parks of Los Angeles, and, as a special rep of the governor's office in Sacramento, Judd Asman." The TV screen showed a great, dense-packed throng of people, many of them howling and waving, others carrying banners with hand-lettered slogans ranging from "Go Home" to "Welcome." In general, the people appeared good-natured. "A big event in our meager, paltry lives," Sebastian thought acidly. "His Mightiness," the announcer continued, "will be whisked by motorcade to Dodger Stadium, where, under the lights, he will deliver a speech to the packed crowd of spectators, mostly his supporters, but not a few of the curious, the just plain interested. This marks the first time in a decade that a major religious leader has visited Los Angeles and harkens back to the good old days when Los Angeles was one of the religious capitals of the world." To his companion announcer, the announcer said, "Wouldn't you say, Chick, that the festive, exuberant atmosphere of Dodger Stadium is reminiscent of the days of Festus Crum and Harold Agee back in the 80s?
"Yes, I would, Don," Chick said, "with one difference. The crowds which greeted Festus Crum, and to a certain extent Harold Agee, had a more militant atmosphere about them. These 4 million people are here at Dodger Stadium and at the airport for a good time, and to see someone famous, someone who delivers a dramatic, notable speech. They've watched him on TV, but somehow this is not the same." The motorcade had now begun its trip from the airport to Dodger Stadium. All along the way, people could be made out. Idiots, Sebastian thought, watching that galoomph when the real religious figure is again alive and back with us, even though the library has him.
"Of course, in seeing Ray Roberts," Chick the announcer said, "one can't help but be reminded of his predecessor, the Anarch Peak."
"Isn't there some talk, Chick, about an imminent return of the Anarch to life?" Don asked, "and a belief current among many that Ray Roberts is here principally to visit the recently old-born Anarch and perhaps persuade him to return to the Free Negro Municipality?"
"There has been such speculation," Chick said, "and also not a little speculation as to whether it would be in the best interests of Udai, or rather would Ray Roberts consider it in the best interests of Udai, for the Anarch to reappear just at this time. Some think Roberts might try to stall the Anarch's return, if such indeed does occur, as many apparently think."
There was temporary silence. The screen still showed the motorcade. The announcer at the TV station cut back in and said, "Briefly, while we're waiting for Ray Roberts to reach Dodger Stadium, a review of other local news. A Los Angeles police officer, Joseph Tinbane, has been found slain at the Happy Holiday Motel in San Fernando, and the police are speculating that it might be the work of religious fanatics. Other guests at the motel reported seeing a woman in the company of Officer Tinbane at the nearby Sogum Palace earlier this evening, but if she exists, she has disappeared. More on this, including an interview with the motel owner, during the 11 o'clock news. Floods in the northern hills near..." Sebastian shut the TV set off. "Christ," he said to the robot, once more Carl Jr. "They've got Lotta and they killed Tinbane." His warning hadn't reached him. It had been futile. Hopeless, he thought, as he found a place to sit. He crouched with his head in his hands, staring down at the floor. "There's nothing I can do. If they could wipe out a professional like Tinbane, they'd have no trouble with me." "It seems almost impossible," the robot said, "to penetrate the library. Our efforts to seed a nest of miniaturized robots in Section B dismally failed. We do not know what else to do. If we had someone sympathetic working there..." The robot pondered. "We hoped that Doug Appleford might cooperate. He appeared to be the most reasonable of the librarians. But in that we were disappointed. It was he who expelled our nest. It added, "Turn the TV on again, please. I wish to watch the motorcade." He gestured, "You turn it on." He did not have the energy to get to his feet again. The robot turned the TV set back on, and once again Chick and Don held forth. "And a good number of whites, too," Don was saying. "So this has turned out to be, as His Mightiness promised, a biracial event, although, as we observed shortly ago, Negroes outnumber whites by a ratio of, I'd estimate, 5 to 1. What estimate would you give, Chick?"
"I find that about right, Don," Chick said. "Yes, 5 colored to each."
Giacometti said, "We must get someone sympathetic into the library, on its staff." He plucked, scowling at his lower lip. "Otherwise the Anarch will never emerge again." "Lada," Sebastian said. "Her too."
"That is of considerably lesser importance," the robot said. "Although to you subjectively, Mr. Hermes, it undoubtedly looms large."
To Giacometti, it said, "Can the Rome Party be of any use in forging credentials which would admit one of us to the library? I understand your people are very good at that." Sardonically, Giacometti said, "Our reputation is undeserved."
"Given time," Carl Jr. ruminated, "we could construct a simulacrum robot resembling, for example, Miss Anne Fisher, but that would take weeks. Perhaps, Mr. Giacometti, if we pool our resources, we can shoot our way into the library?"
"My principle does not operate on that basis," Giacometti said. And that was that. His tone was flat and final. To the robot, Sebastian said, "Ask Ray Roberts what I can do to get into the library."
"At this moment, His Mightiness..."
"Ask him!"
"All right."
The robot nodded and was silent for several minutes. Sebastian and Giacometti waited. At last the robot spoke up again, its tone now firm.
"You are to go to Section B of the library," it said. "You are to ask to see Mr. Douglas Appleford. Would he know you on sight, Mr. Hermes?"
"No," Sebastian said.
"You are to say," the robot said, "that a Miss Charisse McFadden has sent you. Your name will be Lance Arbuthnot, and you have written a demented thesis on the psychogenic origins of death by meteor strike. You are a crank, originally from the FNM, but expelled because of your peculiar views. Mr. Appleford is expecting you. Charisse McFadden has already sounded him as regards you and your queer thesis. He will not be glad to see you, but in line with his job, he must."
Sebastian said, "I don't see that that gets me anywhere."
"It will provide a cover," the robot said, "and a pretext. Your comings and goings, your presence in the library, will be understandable. It is common for crank inventors to hang around Section B. Appleford is accustomed to their presence. Mr. Giacometti..."
It turned its attention toward the advocate of the Rome principle.
"Will you and your people cooperate with UDI in preparing Mr. Hermes a survival kit for use within the library? Our combined resources are required."
After a thoughtful pause, Giacometti nodded. "I think we can assist, providing nothing destructive to human life is involved."
"Mr. Hermes will only be operating defensively," the robot said. "No aggressive program is envisioned. Offensive action on the part of one man against the library is vainglorious. It could never succeed."
Sebastian said, "What if Lance Arbuthnot actually shows up?"
"There is no Lance Arbuthnot," the robot said succinctly. "Miss McFadden is one of the UDITI. Her request to Mr. Appleford was a ploy on our part from the beginning. It stems, in fact, from the teeming, fertile mind of Ray Roberts himself. We even have prepared his hokey thesis on psychosomatic factors in death by meteor strike. Tomorrow it will be delivered, bright and early, to your Conapt door, by special UDI messenger." The robot beamed.
On the TV screen, Don was saying, "At least, there has been a very substantial turnout here at Dodger Stadium, considering the weather."
"Oh,
We understand His Mightiness Ray Roberts is expected to put in his appearance any moment. The crowd noises, muted until now, all at once surged up deafeningly. Mr. Roberts is emerging from the visitor's dugout. Don's voice could be heard saying, "Let's have a close-up of him. I think we can catch him with our camera." The camera zoomed in, and on the screen, four figures marching across the infield toward the improvised lectern could be discerned. "I want absolute silence in this room," the robot said, "while Mr. Roberts is speaking." "Can you see what he's doing now, Don?" Chick was asking. "He seems to be blessing those gathered at the lectern," Don answered. "He's waving his hands in the direction of their heads, as if shaking holy water at them. Yes, he is blessing them. They're all kneeling now." The crowd continued to yell. Sebastian said to the robot, "Then there's nothing we can do tonight," toward getting into the library. "We must wait until it reopens tomorrow morning," the robot confirmed. Now it raised its finger to its lips in a shushing motion. Standing before the microphones, Ray Roberts surveyed the crowd. His Mightiness was a slightly built man, Sebastian observed. Quite delicate, with a birdcage chest, slender arms, and unusually large hands. His eyes cast a penetrating brilliance. They blazed intensely as he sized up the audience before which he now spoke. Roberts wore a simple dark robe and a skull cap, and on his right hand, a ring. "One ring to rule them all," he thought, remembering his Tolkien. "One ring to find them. One ring to..." How did it go? "Bring them all and in the darkness bind them. In the land of Mordor where the shadows lie." The ring of earthly power, he thought, like that fashioned from the Rheingold, carrying a curse with it to whoever put it on. Maybe the operation of the curse, he conjectured, is manifest in the library's seizing the Anarch. "Sum tu," Ray Roberts said, raising his hands. "I am you, and you are I. Distinctions between and among us are illusory." "What do dat mean?" as the old Negro janitor asks in the ancient joke. "It means..." His voice rose booming and echoing. He stared upward, his gaze fixed on a point in the sky beyond Dodger Stadium. "The Negro cannot be inferior to the white man because he is the white man. When the white man in former times did violence to the Negro, he destroyed himself. Today, when a citizen of the free Negro municipality injures and molests a white, he, too, is injuring and molesting himself. I say to you, strike not the ear of the Roman soldier off. It will fall like a dead leaf of its own accord." The crowd roared its cheers. Going into his kitchen, Sebastian lit a cigar butt, puffed some angry smoke into it rapidly. It grew longer. "Maybe Bob Lindy could get me into the library tonight," he said to himself. "Lindy has an ingenious mind. He can do anything mechanical or electrical. Or R.C. Buckley. He can talk his way in anywhere, anytime. My own staff," he thought. "I ought to be depending on them, not on Udai. Even if Udai does possess a prearranged plan all ready to go into gear." "I am reminded," Roberts was expostulating in the living room, "of the little old lady who had been recently old-born and whose greatest fear had been that, when they excavated her, they would find her improperly clothed." The audience chuckled. "But neurotic fears," Roberts continued, now somberly, "can destroy a person and a nation. The neurotic fear by Nazi Germany of a two-front war." He droned on. Sebastian ceased listening. "Maybe I'll have to accept the robot's method," he said to himself, "and wait until tomorrow. Joe Tinbane shot his way in, got her, and shot his way out, and what good did it do? Tinbane is dead, and Lotta is once more inside the library. Nothing got accomplished." The library, he reflected, must be dealt with in a certain way, a way customary and familiar to them. Udai is right. I must be accepted voluntarily into the library. But how, when I get in there, he asked himself, can I keep from running amok? When I actually face them, the strain will be overwhelming, enormous, and I will have to sit there chatting with Appleford about a deranged pseudo-manuscript. He returned to the living room. Over the din of Ray Roberts' tirade, he yelled at the robot, I can't do it! The robot, annoyed, cupped its ear. I'm getting into the library tonight, Sebastian yelled. But the robot paid no attention to him. Its head had swiveled back, and once more it was drinking up the noise from the TV set. Giacometti rose, took him by the arm, and led him back to the kitchen. In this case, the Uditi are right. This must be done slowly, bit by bit. We, especially you yourself, must be patient. You'll simply get yourself killed like the police officer. It all must be, he gestured, indirect, even tactfully. You see? He studied Sebastian's face. Tonight, Sebastian said, I'm going there now. You will go, but you won't come back. Setting down his completed cigar, Sebastian said, Hello, I'll see you later. I'm leaving. Don't try to approach the library. Don't... Giacometti's words blended with the howl of the TV set, and then Sebastian shut the CONAPT door after him. He was outside, in the hall, in welcome silence. For what seemed like hours, he roamed the dark streets, hands deep in his trouser pockets, passing stores, passing houses that, as time progressed, became increasingly darkened, until at last he glanced up at a block of residences which showed no light at all. Now no one passed him on the sidewalk. He was entirely alone. All at once he found himself confronted by three members of Udai, two men and one young woman. Each wore the Sum Tu button. The girl had placed hers at the farthest projection of her right breast, like an enlarged, winking metal nipple. They greeted him cheerfully. Vale Amicus, they chorused. What did you think of His Mightiness's speech tonight? Excellent, Sebastian said. He tried to remember it. Only one phrase came to mind. I liked that about the Roman sentry's ear, he said. That gripped me. We have some spirit sogum, the taller of the two Udidi men informed him. Want to join us? Even if you're not part of the Brotherhood, you can celebrate with us. He could not turn such an offer down. Fine, he said. It had been years since he had imbibed any spirit sogum. Roughly, it resembled the old-time alcoholic mixtures sold at liquor stores and in bars. This took him back years to before the Hobart phase. Presently, they had all squeezed into a parked air car and were passing the flask with its long pipe back and forth. The atmosphere became increasingly genial.
What are you doing out so late? The Udai girl asked him. Hunting for women?
Yes, Sebastian said. The spirit sogum had relaxed his tongue. He felt himself among friends, and probably he was.
Well, if that's what you want, we can go...
No, Sebastian said, interrupting her. It's not what you think. I'm looking for my wife, and I know where she is, only I can't get her out.
We'll get her out, the shorter of the Udidi men said happily. Where is she?
At the People's Topical Library, Sebastian said.
Feud,
all three Udidi said in enthusiastic unison. Let's go. One of them at the wheel started the motor of the car. It's closed right now, Sebastian pointed out. That temporarily dimmed their enthusiasm. The three of them conferred, and at last their spokesman presented their joint idea for his inspection.
The library has an all-night slot for books past their ERAD date. One of those no-questions-asked slots. Couldn't you squeeze in through there?
Too small, Sebastian said. That, too, dampened their ever-renewing enthusiasm.
You gotta wait until tomorrow, the girl informed him, unless you want to call the police.
But phew, I understand they have a hands-off policy as regards the library. A sort of live and let live.
Except, Sebastian said, the library killed a Los Angeles patrolman earlier tonight. But he couldn't prove it had been the library. He had already heard the TV blame it on religious fanatics.
Maybe you could get Ray Roberts to include your wife in one of his prayers, the Udai girl said at last, hopefully.
I still think, the taller of the two men said, the four of us ought to go somewhere and have an orgy.
He thanked them, got out of the car, and wandered on. The car, however, followed after him. When it came abreast with him, one of the Udidi rolled down the window, leaned out and yelled to him,
If you want to bust in, we'll give you a hand. We're not scared of the People's Topical Library.
You're goddamn right we're not,
the Udai girl chimed in warmly.
No,
Sebastian decided. He had to do this alone. The three Uditi, good-intentioned as they were, couldn't really help him.
Go home, fella, their spokesman now implored him. You can't do nothing tonight. Give it another try tomorrow.
They were right. He nodded.
Okay,
he said. He felt overwhelming fatigue now as soon as he recognized that fact. As soon as his mind gave up, his body readily followed suit. He waved hello, or rather, salve, to the three of them, and roamed on toward a lighted intersection ahead, searching for a cab. He had never felt as dejected before in all his life.